This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is the Breakfast Grill. This time, the economic crisis is not one caused by the collapse of a financial institution, but by an unseen deadly virus. In fact, banks provided much-needed support for individuals and businesses through a government-imposed loan moratorium. But this prolonged COVID-19 pandemic has created a wide range of challenges. We speak to CEO of Alliance Bank, Joel Conright, for an outlook and whether they are ready for the structural changes in the industry. Welcome to the show, Joel. Not a first for BFM, but clearly a first for the Breakfast Grill. Sorry if I'm giving away some of your secrets, but you have been a banker since early 1990s. But was managing a bank during the COVID-19 era the most challenging in your career?
Actually, I don't know about that, but it's been a very interesting challenge. I view that as an opportunity because it's an opportunity to accelerate the modernization of the bank, and it's an opportunity to show that we are good at helping people. I think this is a big part of the DNA of Alliance Bank, providing a lot more digital services. You know, what we see, for example, is 3 years ago, about 30% of our transactions were digital, meaning on mobile or internet. And today it's 72%. So COVID has actually accelerated this amazingly. What we also see is when we look at our customers' behavior also changed tremendously. If you look at our credit card transactions, for example, there's no turning back. In May of this year, transactions online for credit cards, as opposed to in physical sales points, is actually larger, is actually the majority, which is an amazing turning point, right? You know, the world is changing, and we got to be with that.
Yeah, but it hasn't exactly been good times for the banking industry. I think everyone's seen a dip in their profits, and it's the same for Alliance Bank. But would you say the worst is over? I mean, if I just look at the first quarter of this financial year, a decent profit, 146 million ringgit, higher than the 104 million for the same period last year. But I don't think we can simply just annualize this figure. What are your expectations for the coming quarters then?
Yeah, we've given guidance. We've said that we'd be higher than 7.5% of return on equity this year. We're quite hopeful that we'll be able to do that. You know, but it's not just about the pursuit of profit. It's about repositioning the bank for success. Right? So we see that, first of all, helping customers successfully be very good for the bank. And we're very proud to say that our net promoter score, so we measure that, you know, how we help people on payment assistance, we're actually number one. We also see this as an opportunity to turn the corner on some portfolios where the performance has not been what we wanted it to be. So now we already see that our credit costs hopefully would be within 90 basis points this year and start to come down next year, because we're taking also the opportunity of this to take the provisions through overlays. We've taken 380 million already of provisions. It's clear that things are going to start to reopen and are reopening, right? And so the economy is going to, you know, restart. And I think we can be quite optimistic that things will get a lot better for a lot of people.
Yeah, but when I look at the details, what worries me a little bit is that 32% of the total loans in Alliance Bank are under some assistance package. That's quite significant. Doesn't that give you sleepless nights though, Joel?
No, because Xiaoning, actually, you can see it two different ways. One way is obviously, you know, some portfolios are more challenged, so more people will request assistance. That's a given. But the other way also is how proactive we are in approaching our customers to help them. And a very interesting fact is that over 90% of those who avail the Pemulih package, which is about two-thirds of all this repayment assistance right now for the bank, 90% of those were actually performing fine at the time that they took the package. So there's a reasonable expectation, you know, based on what we saw last year with the moratorium, that the vast majority, you know, over 90% of them will emerge just fine from taking that assistance. And having said that, we're already trying to foresee how we can help people who are going to be graduating from these packages beginning of next year. You know, how do we help them and how do we continue helping them if it's required? You know, some people's income will recover slowly, more slowly than others. While we expect all sectors to start to recover, you know, some are more challenged, like the tourism sector. Right? So we have to help people. You know, it doesn't stop abruptly, I think, exiting this crisis, as we've seen in other countries.
So you're saying that for a lot of your customers, actually, they're quite opportunistic in nature. They take advantage of the moratoriums to shore up cash, would you say that? So perhaps the economy is not in such a bad situation as you think when you look at these headline numbers?
The economy has been hit because I think last year was a different situation. You know, the moratorium provided a lot of relief for a lot of people, and people still had some reserves of cash. That MCO 3.0 was a very different occurrence because people had already depleted quite a bit of their reserves. To be clear, a lot of people saw their incomes drop because anybody who's earning commissions obviously would not be earning commissions through the time of all these restrictions. So I think it is important, actually, to help people through this period. That doesn't mean that they won't recover. I think a vast majority of people will recover. Unemployment is only 4.8%, which means 95% of people are employed. And as the economy recovers, you know, all sectors will recover as well. But I think it's okay. It's okay for people to have taken this help and to be able to build a little bit of reserves with the cash. And, you know, the good thing, you know, the silver lining in this is that there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand. Mm. So right now, I think people may not be so optimistic on things like the property sector, for example. I see a light at the end of the tunnel because property sector is a long cycle business, right? It takes 4 or 5 years from the inception of projects to, people actually being able to move into those homes. The last couple of years where things have slowed down a lot are helping to rebalance demand and supply. And it's not yet completely apparent. It will be. I'm quite optimistic, actually, that we'll be seeing a much healthier economy, not so much in the next few months, but 2022, 2023, it's going to get interesting in a positive way.
Now, I want to focus on SMEs because, you know, that's a segment that Alliance Bank touts itself as being the leader of lending and also customers. But when I look at the loans, it's 23% of total loans. But what I notice is also that 89% of these SME loans are classified as either red or amber under repayment assistance. Now, is management worried about the risk of default in this particular segment? And what kind of assistance are you giving them? Because on our show, we have many conversations with SME owners and SME organizations. And they say, you know, when you need help from the bankers, it's exactly that moment when they take away the umbrella.
We've provided over $1 billion of assistance from all these government funds, which is far, far above our market share. Our market share in SME is around 5%. And our ambition is to double that to 2025. So we feel good about what we've done for the SME customers. And historically, our SME portfolio has been extremely good in terms of performance. While we've had challenges in the consumer portfolio, which explains why we're forecasting about 90 basis points of losses this year versus the industry somewhere between 50 and 70 basis points. In the SME space, actually, the performance has been excellent. And actually, what we're trying to do now is to help people restart as they emerge from COVID. Things have been disrupted. Supply chains have been disrupted. Businesses have been shuttered for a certain period of time. And so people really need working capital, to restart the machine, so to speak, right? So that's the key objective that we have right now. And we're starting to see our SME book accelerate again.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Joel Conrad, Group CEO of Alliance Bank. When we come back, how big a threat are digital banks? And is staying niche the way to go? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. And the hot seat this morning is Joel Conrad, Group CEO of Alliance Bank. Just before the break, we were talking about the challenges of running a bank during this COVID crisis and is the worst yet to come in terms of asset quality. Now, Joel, let's shift a little bit towards growth. You've been rather optimistic. You say that the economy is going to recover in 2022. But is that reflective in terms of your loans growth? Because you're guiding 3 to 4%. But yet the GDP is supposed to be maybe 4-5%. So why are you slightly behind in this figure? Or are you just being conservative?
So you're absolutely right. We'll be ahead for SME and the commercial sectors, but we will be behind in the consumer space. The reason being that there's been a lot of impediments to actually lending in the consumer space, especially in real estate, over the past 12 to 18 months. And it takes time to restart.
Now, this is maybe a bit of a philosophical question, because if you truly are a capitalist, you would argue that why are banks being the lifeline in this economic crisis? And banks asked to support economies. At the same time, you're a listed company, so you have obligations to shareholders to maximize profit. How do you balance this, though, Joel?
Well, that's very true. And I don't believe that banks should be the only companies that are profitable that should contribute to helping the economy recover. Everyone who's fortunate to generate, you know, reasonable profits or wealth, you know, should help others, because this is about, you know, trying to get everyone to restart on a healthy footing, right? And it's the government's role to figure out how to redistribute to folks who need it. We're not at all hostile to the principle of solidarity. We just don't think that the banks should be the sole provider of that solidarity. I think it should be broad-based. Now, of course, we have, like you said, responsibility to our shareholders, and we have to balance all of that. But I think that helping people in a way that's reasonable for the business is not just good for the folks that we help. It's also good for the business, because it will also limit credit costs by helping people get back on their feet in a reasonable way, which in turn will help the shareholders as well. As a bank, we're part of the fabric of the economy, and we are there for a reason, not just as an enterprise
that makes billions every year.
Well, we wish we made billions every year. We don't quite make billions every year. Some of our colleagues do, but we do have the societal role, and to channel resources from places in the economy where there's access to places where there's projects and desires for consumption and so on, to allow the economy to grow, right, and also facilitate payments. That's our role. Our role goes beyond just the role of a profitable enterprise.
Now, Joel, the other thing that we've seen a lot of changes in is digital banking. Bank Negara is going to issue exclusive licenses just for digital banks, 5 of them, in the first quarter of 2022. I want to know, how is Alliance Bank going to compete? Because for a lot of these applicants, so far from what I've read, they're going to focus in the same segment that you are focusing in, SMEs, micro SMEs. So how are you going to overcome these new disruptors when they eventually roll out?
Well, we've embarked on our digital journey, a few years ago. And we today, for example, and over 90% of our consumer current accounts are open digitally through our system called Branch in the Tablet. And more than 70% of our business accounts are also open digitally. We provide digital unsecured loans both in the consumer and in the business space. You can actually have a self-serve business loan up to 50,000, because we launched this digital SME business a few months back. We are the first ones to provide E-Trade, and 30% of our trade transactions are actually done digitally as well. So we have made a lot of progress.
But the issue with digital banks is that they don't have your legacy high fixed costs. And many of them are actually tech companies or hybrids of tech companies. So, I'm curious whether when they start, their products will be unique and even priced lower than what you can currently offer. And that's when you might see an erosion of market share.
I think that competition is here to stay, and really whether it's coming from the digital entrance into the field or it's coming from our colleagues across the street, everybody is in a race to provide better services, cheaper, more conveniently, and faster to consumers and businesses alike. I think the way that this is being done by Bank Negara is being done quite responsibly, because these new entrants are expected to grow gradually. There's some constraints on the growth. They're expected to contribute to financial inclusion. And in the meantime, you know, all the banks are also, you know, rolling out these innovations. Like I said, you know, almost three quarters of our transactions today are executed by our clients online or via mobile. And that's not going to change. That's going to continue to increase. You are right about the fixed cost. The challenge for us is, you know, how do we manage the physical infrastructure that we have, and how do we adapt it to the times? So we have an ambitious project to change the configuration of our branches so that we can eliminate back offices in our branches and simplify, you know, the notion of services over the counter. Because every year, the services over the counter, the number of transactions drops by 15 to 20%.
Mm. But that's to your advantage, because we do know branches tend to cost quite a fair bit of money.
Well, it is not immediately to the bank's advantage, because as long as you need to maintain the same type of infrastructure, you don't benefit from that, because, you know, regardless of whether somebody walks into a branch to do a transaction or not, the costs are pretty much the same. But this is why we need to change the configuration as well. There have been a number of branch closures in Malaysia and around the world, partly for that reason. In our case, we're not planning to close too many branches, in great part because a lot of our branches are in rural areas where people need those services, so we have to continue providing them. But we are planning to change the way the branch model is done, so that it's more efficient and is able to adapt to a smaller number of over-the-counter transactions.
Which then leads to this bigger question I have about where Alliance Bank sees itself in 3 to 5 years. I mean, you're one of the smallest listed banks in Malaysia. And in the past, you know, it's all about being niche, staying small, staying nimble.
Well, we're not small for the love of being small, let's be clear. But we have to pick and choose where we're going to be big, right? And we've decided that, you know, the number one space where we are going to be big and we have a chance of being big, because we've been gaining market share steadily over the past few years, is the SME space. So in the SME space, our market share is 5%, and we intend to double that over the next 4 to 5 years, right? And we think we are on the trajectory to do that. And the way we're doing it is, like I said, launching the digital SME, increasing the strength of our sales force, and increasing its efficiency by rolling out digital processes. For example, it used to be 2-3 years ago, it would take a couple of weeks to open a business account and several visits. Now it's one day, one visit, and actually in 60 or 70% of the cases, 1 hour, because we do this digitally. And so, you know, we see a lot of opportunity there because our philosophy is, we call it build alliances to improve lives. So we focus on the business owner, help them fund their business, run their business, and get more clients and get more business. And, you know, their families, their staff, their retail clients. You know, for example, we've onboarded over the last 2-3 years, we think of the year, well over 1,000 new-to-payroll customers.
Okay, so you've managed to be very good at conversions. But a lot of this is organic growth. What about inorganic growth? Because every time a financial, well, economic crisis rolls around, then there's, you know, you hear talks of M&As. And we do know that Citibank's Malaysia consumer assets are for sale. And I've read that the potential bidders are Standard Chartered, UOB, Hong Leong Bank. But why isn't Alliance Bank running for those assets? So is it something that you've considered or not considered in the first place?
I think that any opportunity we will look at, right? But we will look at it to see whether it is accretive to the bank, whether it's, you know, the right size and the right opportunity for us. So I can't comment on the Citibank business because it's an ongoing transaction. So I can't tell you yes or no. But what I can tell you is that anything that becomes available, we will look at it very seriously.
Okay, so it's not out of the question. Maybe not Citibank, but perhaps other banks?
It is definitely not out of the question.
I want to look at share price performance. It's Alliance Bank 12% down on a year-to-date basis, and this is compared to the broader Bursa Finance Index, which is flat for the same period. And even again, for the benchmark FBM KLCI, which is down 5%. So, underperforming. And I'm trying to be fair here, so let's take a longer lens. If I look at it from end December 2017, it's a similar picture. Alliance Bank has a negative return of 37% versus the Finance Index negative return of 10% and the FBM KLCI, which is down 15%. I'm just curious, why do you think the market shows such little love for Alliance Bank?
Well, we have to recognize that we've had in 2018 and 19, we've had performance issues in our consumer portfolio, primarily through this Alliance One account. And that's taken some time to fix. I'm happy to report that we're really seeing the turnaround now. So we're very focused on return on equity. And we know that once we get closer to or above 10% return on equity, you know, the share price will recover substantially. So it's for us to prove that we can get back on that trajectory. And that's what we intend to do in the next year or two. And I think that that will take care of performance. But of course, we don't dictate the share price. We can only create the conditions for a better share price with a better performance. And that's what we're focused on.
So you have said ROEs, return on equities, are low. So currently 7%. Industry average, sector average is 9%. And you've got a target to move to above 10%, double digit. Do you have a timeline, and how are you going to achieve it? Because if you look at it just from a financial perspective, you have a few options. Either you suddenly improve profit or you actually reduce shareholders' funds. That's a simple ratio, right? And perhaps is then offering more dividends on the cards?
So let's talk about the improving profit first. Actually, our return on equity for the first quarter of this financial year was well above 8%. We've guided that will be over 7.5% this year. And over the next 3 years or so, we think we can get over the 10% hurdle. Now, you are right. The denominator also counts. And we've been very conservative with our capital through this COVID era. When things return to normal, of course, we fully intend to go back to our dividend policy, which, as you know, is up to 60% distribution. But we have purposely been conservative during this this COVID pandemic. Yes, things will revert to normal. I can't tell you exactly when, but it won't be that long.
And so there's no pressure from the shareholders for more dividends, because you have a rather unusual bunch of shareholders, at least the major shareholders, right? So 14% is held by Singapore's Temasek, and then you have three other individuals which hold 15%. There's always been questions on the market about this. Shareholders. Are you a bank also just waiting to be sold then?
Well, you know, whether there's any of that kind of activity around the bank, that's not really my purview, right? It can happen to any bank anyway. So I think that, you know, my mission is to make sure the bank performs as well as it can. Come what may, let's say that, right? I think our shareholders are very smart people, and they want two things. They want the returns, and included in the returns are the dividends that they get. They also want to make sure that the bank is well capitalized to fund its growth. Right? And we share those objectives.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill was Joel Conrad, Group CEO of Alliance Bank. I'm Wong Shaning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.